Expect more and pay less at Target. Drop that beat. Let's keep it 100 this summer. The hot sun will be shining, and Target has put some of their favorite warm weather items on sale. Natural fun. You can link to this week's deals from my new website at ninababel.com/podcast, and you're going to look for episode number 19, which will give you the links to this week's store discounts. Welcome back to another edition of the Keep It 100 Girls Show, coming to you live and direct from Washington, D.C. Nina keeps it 100 and she keeps it real and true. And this is where women like you and me, we tell the truth, nothing but the truth, even if it's totally embarrassing or super cray-cray. As always, I'm unapologetically myself, and I talk to you like I talk to my own girlfriends. But here's the dealio. My secret is I share what women are thinking but not saying out loud. Most of you are shy, nervy, and embarrassed to ask. Our stories are cray-cray, edgy, and what some of you would consider taboo-ish. The Girly Nation, are you ready to keep it 100?
Ready to keep it 100, girl.
Oh, Nina, I keep it 100, baby.
Yes, I'm ready to keep it 100.
I'm ready to keep it 100, girl.
You know I'm going to keep it 100.
My hand is raised. How about yours? In part one, it looks like we got hipper to the biological clock game. We learned not to wait and take a proactive approach, starting at the age of 32, especially if you're thinking about having children. But don't wait. The time will never be just right. Most of these women knew it, but didn't take heed to the ticking of their clocks. Not on purpose either. All of them got married in their mid-30s. Which just meant that they started their journey to having a family at 35 years old or beyond. In today's episode, my goal is to continue to put the bug in your ear so we can spare you some of the same hardships so you don't feel the shame, stuck, or even have regrets. Just know the age of 35 is your measuring stick that signals your plumbing is changing. If you're in tune with your body, especially when it comes to ovulation, you will feel the difference. Now it's time for the takeaways every female should know. Nora highlights what every woman should know up front as part of their own self-care journey. First, Nora talks about our egg count and how they decrease over time.
It starts at 2 million, but what you really have to work with by the time that you're getting periods is actually less than that, but doesn't really matter, more than you'll ever need if you use them at the right time. The issue is ovarian reserve, meaning how many of your eggs that you are working with are actually chromosomally normal. And there's something called ovarian reserve, which is how many eggs are left that are working, and there's some testing we can use to look at that.
Second takeaway, AMH blood test. Nora talks about a woman's timeline and her ovarian reserve. Nora wants women to know there's a window to capture your most fertile moments and to be aware of that no later than the age of 38.
But then there's egg quality, which starts to diminish again very precipitously after 38. You know, if you're a woman who knows you want to have children, and many of us are in that boat even in our 20s when we know someday we want to have children. If you're with a partner with whom you want to have those kids and you're 30, you need to start thinking about it. You don't have to do it tomorrow, but it's a good time to really examine, okay, what's the timeline here? And maybe have your AMH level drawn, which is something called anti-Müllerian hormone. It gives us an idea of the ovarian reserve you're working with. If that level were to come back a little low, your GYN may want to do an ultrasound and look at your antral follicle count, which is the number of immature follicles you're working with at the beginning of a cycle. Mm-hmm. And if that number appears a little low, you may be someone who wants to start earlier than later, but it's just good information to have. It's not something to panic about. It's just good information. And be proactive. Look ahead. You know, if you know you want to have kids, don't wait till you're 38 and start trying for a year or maybe 2 years, which a lot of patients we see, that is their story. They don't come in till they're 40, and we've lost a really good window for capturing their most fertile moments.
The third takeaway is about your egg count. Your egg quality degrades over time, which is linked to you not getting pregnant or the increased likelihood of a miscarriage.
It's not so much that they're not there, it's that they're really degrading. They're chromosomally degrading, so they're not functioning normally. So that's what the change is over time. So the quality changes. The eggs are still there. You know, they're definitely diminishing, but they're still there. The question is, reserve is one thing, meaning how many do you have, but what is the quality of the eggs? When eggs start to become chromosomally abnormal, you wind up in a situation of either not getting pregnant or getting briefly pregnant and having a miscarriage. That's why you see more trisomies, Down syndrome, that type of thing in older women. Those pregnancies are more common. You know, as we get older, we've all heard those rates of, oh, if you're over this, you know, if you're over 38, your rates of Down syndrome go up by this much. That has to do with the egg quality degrading and leading to chromosomal abnormalities.
The next takeaway is the quality of your cervical fluid during ovulation. In episode number 2, called Sticky and Gross, as well as my YouTube channel, I refer to this as the sticky test. Bianca shares the optimal situation for the sticky test. She describes exactly what to look for in your panties.
You want your cervical fluid to be like that of egg whites. So when you have egg whites on your finger and you pinch it together and then you open it up, you want that egg white to stick to both fingers and to stretch between them. That right there is excellent cervical fluid. That right there will sustain life. So if your egg releases, like you have sex on Monday and you have that quality cervical fluid, by Wednesday, when your egg is actually released, the sperm can sustain itself in that cervical fluid and you could get pregnant. You don't have to have sex on the day that you ovulate. You could have sex a couple days before, and the sperm will live in that because there's enough nutrients in a good quality cervical fluid that then, once the egg is released, then it could go about its business and trying to get on up in there. But if your cervical fluid is, like, sticky, then it can't swim through there. It doesn't have the nutrients. It can't get through. If you think of an egg white, it's clear. When you drop the egg, the stuff is long. Like, you lift the egg up and it's long. It's like jelly. But not like jelly, but it's like KY. It's like the quality of KY. Sometimes, like when you put your fingers on it, there'll be like a soft peak. Like if you're whipping up eggs and you're trying to make like a meringue or whatever, it's a soft peak instead of like a long string. Like you want, again, it's kind of like snot. Sometimes when your snot is like you blow and it's like a long thing of snot, and you're like, ew, and it gets all over your hand or whatever. And
yeah.
Other times it's like a sticky, gummy yuckiness. The gummy yuckiness is no good because the sperm can't swim through that. It's that clear, thin, runny sort of snotty thing that is actually really, really good. And that is what you need to sustain the life of the sperm so that it can get there whenever the egg is there.
Now let's talk about the start of each of these women's journey. Now that they're more familiar with their clock, which goes hand in hand with realizing if your clock is broken or if you're just late to the dance. Onika gives a realistic picture of the psychological, physical, and emotional journey. Similar to what Nora mentioned earlier, Onika talks about her egg count abnormalities, fibroids, and she also wants you to consider opening yourself up to non-Western practices.
Chances of being able to produce more eggs, obviously depleting. I think at one point in the beginning stages, I had a much higher percentage of eggs that were being produced, and then they came back and said that it was like 3% or something. I was like, whoa. So all these things were pointing in the direction of a diagnosis of infertility, which led me to seek IVF treatment. And at the time, I sought out an insurance plan that would help me, because it's very expensive.
Right.
And
isn't it like $10,000 a pop or something?
Per cycle, yeah, between $10,000 and $15,000 per cycle. Luckily, I had an insurance that would pay a significant part of it, but we still had to come out of the pocket a couple thousand dollars. So it wasn't free for us by any means. And it was limited to 3 attempts. So we completed our first cycle about a year and a half ago, and it didn't work. As a matter of fact, they were only able to retrieve. The purpose of IVF is just assistive reproductive technique that they use. It's actually very close to how your body naturally operates, where you get hormone injections. They go in after the hormone injections, and hopefully your body has produced many eggs at one time so that they can go in and retrieve those eggs and take your partner's sperm, fertilize them, and hopefully they're successful in fertilizing those eggs so they can, you know, insert and implant them. And hopefully you have implantation and it turns from fertilization to an embryo and then into a fetus, et cetera, et cetera. So, unfortunately, instead of having multiple eggs being produced through the process of IVF, they were only able to retrieve, I think, one or two, which is not a good sign because it's not guaranteed that the whatever that they retrieve actually is going to take, right?
Right.
And so in my particular case, there was some abnormality with the one egg that they were able to save. And because of the abnormality, we didn't even have an opportunity to for them to actually even insert it. So it was a failed attempt, period. And so I was not happy about that, obviously, and that takes a while to sort of, like, you know, regroup. You know, nothing's guaranteed 100%, so they do a really good job of preparing you for all possible considerations. But at the same time, you know, it's a very laborious process, being drugged up on all those hormones, not knowing that that's going to have an impact on, you know, my existing conditions with the fibroids already in the body because you're being pumped up with estrogen. So it's just a lot of different things. You know, feel like yourself. You've got to have injections twice a day. It's just a lot of, it's a lot psychological, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And my husband and I had decided that after the first round didn't work, that we would just take some time off because I really did not feel 100% myself. I wanted to cleanse and I wanted to detox. I want an opportunity to kind of get back to feeling a sense of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
So that sent me on a journey trying to clean myself and find other non-Western methods.
At RMACT, Nora and her staff gives their patients the option of incorporating non-Western practices in hopes of increasing their chances of conceiving.
On our staff, we have two full-time acupuncturists. We have nutritionists on our staff. So I think that we try and embrace those other modalities because we do find them really helpful. When you talk about having a more holistic lifestyle or using a naturopath, naturopaths can certainly play into the whole picture. I think the most important thing you can do when you're, you know, living in a way that greatly impacts the things that you're eating, drinking, taking as supplements, the best thing you can do is talk to your healthcare provider about it so that all the care is tied up and everybody is in the loop. There's nothing wrong with seeing a naturopath, but if you're taking hormones with a reproductive endocrinologist, you want to make sure that those two things are not clashing in any way or decreasing your chances of success. But all of those things can work together.
Onika describes how her attempt to incorporate non-Western practices, such as acupuncture, opened up an area of self-awareness she had to deal with first before moving forward.
So I tried acupuncture. That was an interesting process because I think I went to the acupuncturist that you had recommended.
Okay.
She was phenomenal. But one thing that she did say to me on more than one occasion, which basically stopped the treatment,
because
she felt like we were wasting my money, basically. And they have a lot of unique ancient practices when they're trying to take a look and assess what they think is going wrong with you. And one of the things that she said was, I guess even just looking into my eyes, she said, you have a lot of things on your mind, and your process with acupuncture or anything that you try is not going to be successful until you learn to let go. And I think that you had recommended to me at the time a book on meditation called The Practice of Letting Go. And there were some things going on, I think, in my life personally or emotionally that I hadn't let go of, from childhood to young adulthood, past relationships, just things I had not just released.
Bianca went the acupuncture route as well. She gives full credit to this process because her doctor told her flat out she couldn't have kids.
I seriously credit that information coupled with acupuncture, with me getting pregnant. I really do. Because, I mean, we were going through infertility treatments because it wasn't working. And I don't know whether we weren't having sex at the right time. The acupuncture, I think, really, really helped because it's crazy. But I don't remember if I told you or not. There was one time when I was laying on her table that I felt like a blockage had been removed. I literally felt that. That whole experience for me, Nina, and again, you were a blessing turning me on to her. You know, unfortunately, I was open enough to go, even though, you know, I'm not a super fan of needles. But at that point, I was just like, well, let me check it out. But while I was there, there was two times that were just like celestial, otherworldly. But that one time I felt like there was a blockage removed. And there was another time where I kind of felt like I was floating outside of my body. It was the strangest thing. But after that, I kind of knew. I was like, this is working. This is going to help.
Nora emphasizes time does matter. Whether you decide to freeze your eggs, IVF, IUI, surrogate, or lastly adopt, they are all viable options. She will provide the medical answers and considerations for those of you who are in your 20s, 30s, and 40s that are looking or doing the investigative research to take this journey.
I think for women in their 20s and 30s, the advice is pretty similar in terms of really good self-care, annual GYN visits, always doing cultures when you go to the GYN for gonorrhea and chlamydia. Many of our infertility patients come from having previously had chlamydia or gonorrhea. And because those are often symptomless, they can lead to something called pelvic inflammatory disease, which occludes the tubes. So when women are having trouble getting pregnant, sometimes in their 30s, it's actually because of an infection they may have acquired, you know, in their 20s. So using condoms religiously in your 20s and 30s when you're single, taking really good care of yourself, not smoking. I mean, in terms of the statistics on smoking, up to 13% of female infertility is caused by cigarette smoking, which is really a staggering number. So if you're a smoker, quit. Maintaining a healthy weight is also very helpful because we do see a decrease in rates when women get over a BMI of about 32. We definitely see some decreased pregnancy rates. When women are underweight, they also have trouble getting pregnant. So where BMI, sometimes we see preterm labor and some real difficulties in pregnancy. So maintaining an ideal weight is a great idea. Not smoking, always a great idea. And taking care of yourself in general, getting enough rest, staying healthy, and lowering your stress level never hurts. I mean, there's not a lot of direct data that speaks to this, but we know about it in the field, that when people are incredibly stressed, all these endocrine systems are all connected with what's going on in your brain. So anything you can do, like yoga or meditation, to sort of keep yourself in better balance always helps.
Infertility rates have increased over time. Based on her experience, Nora highlights it's not embarrassing being a fertility patient, but most people think it is.
I mean, when you say all of those things together, I think my mind keeps going to the same thing in terms of what's embarrassing for women or what's one thing you can tell women. I just feel like there is still so much shame in being a patient who requires assistance to get pregnant. You know, 1 in 8 couples is infertile, and yet people don't want to tell their families, don't want to tell their friends. And what I find funny is I've been doing this a long time, and if I'm at a school function or I'm at a party and I tell people what I do, by the end of the night, at least 4 people have come to me and told me all about their IVF cycle, because I think that they get that I get it. So they might tell me, but they might not tell their friend who seemed to quickly get pregnant with no, you know, need for help and that kind of thing. So for me, the message to women would be, don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. You haven't done anything wrong. And there are many, many more infertile people now than there were in the past. And part of that is because we've delayed childbearing. And part of that is because the world is more complicated. And it's okay. It's okay to talk about it. And, you know, you'd be surprised how supportive the people are around you, your family, your friends. And those awkward moments when, you know, you're at a family gathering and someone announces they're pregnant and everyone's kind of looking at you funny, like you've been married for 5 years. What's the deal? All of that can go away if you tell the key players in your life that, you know, you're struggling with this and you're getting help. So in terms of embarrassing moments, it's not embarrassing to be a fertility patient, but people think that it is.
Girly Nation is living proof to the unfair but true circumstances women find themselves in and how we're able to turn a negative into a positive time and time again. Bear in mind, every woman's situation is unique and will vary. The message to all of Girly Nation is preparedness. Next, understanding your body leading up to the age of 35 years old is of utmost importance, as well as knowing what your options are afterwards. Bianca recalls the noticeable changes in her body at 35 years old.
It's different for every woman. I absolutely remember after turning 35, that change in my body. And I didn't know what it was. I just knew that it was different, that the same things that used to happen weren't happening anymore, not as intensely as they used to happen. You know, the wetness that I felt during ovulation versus before 35 versus what I felt after 35. But I didn't, before I got that book, I didn't know what it was. I knew that it was different. I just didn't know what it was or what it meant, what that meant for my body as it was changing. So For me, it was 35, but for someone else, it could be 30.
It's a catch-22. It kind of makes me angry that you're given this limited time period to act, not knowing if you're going to have a partner, if your marriage is going to last. But speaking from my own experience, I can tell you that I was not ready in my 20s in any shape or form to have a child. I mean, mentally, I was just not there. And I chose my career as my focus and direction, thinking, you know what, I got time where I could play catch up, and that didn't happen. Bianca wasn't ready to be a parent in her 20s. She feels the weight made her a better parent, though.
You know, it's a catch-22 because when you're younger, I feel like you are not confident enough. You don't have enough of yourself, of who you are as a person, to give the way you need to give to a child. You give everything to your child, every single thing. And when I was young, I know I was not ready for that. I was not ready to be the parent that I am, that I was in my 30s and I am now. When I was younger, I wasn't ready. I'm raising a better child. I am a better parent because I'm older, because I had the opportunity to do the things that I wanted to do, to travel, to just be me and not have to worry about someone else and give myself as much as it requires. And it requires everything, every single thing. It's the hardest thing, but obviously there's so much joy in it too.
Wendy's in her 40s in a long-term relationship and doesn't have any children, but wanted to pass the positivity to listeners. There's nothing like missing that God-given window and left with no options to conceive a child naturally.
Think about freezing your eggs. If you do feel like you might want to have children, it's your decision. So that's what I would tell someone in their 20s.
I like that. I wish someone told me that.
Yeah, someone tried to tell me that in my 30s, and I don't know.
You dismissed it?
I didn't dismiss it, but I think I was still sort of thinking again.
You'll do it.
I was thinking, I'm going to meet somebody, and there's still time.
Right.
I did meet somebody, but the timing was off. So, you know, in terms of the timing was off for us to do it the natural way.
Best practice as a woman is to self-advocate yourself with your reproductive health. Nora is totally in favor in freezing your eggs, especially if you could afford it.
Every once in a while, there are women who do go into something called premature ovarian failure. It's not very common, but there are women who actually are losing their fertility earlier, potentially in their late 20s. It's always something good to know about. The question becomes, what are you going to do with that information? I mean, I think the important thing is to advocate for yourself, be proactive, but really think about what you're going to do with the information. If it makes you panicked and stressed, it's not helpful to go get it, because these things all work in concert. And if you get yourself completely overwrought about it, you're probably going to undo some positive things. So if you're at a point in your life, I mean, say if I were 32 and didn't have a partner, knowing what I know, I'd freeze my eggs. I think it's a good thing to talk with the GYN about too. If it's something a woman is considering, if she, you know, doesn't see marriage around the corner and she's hitting that, you know, 32 to 34 year old age bracket, I think it's a great idea to at least have the discussion.
The blockage is not always physical either, but psychological. You may have some skeletons that you've never dealt with or suppressed that have manifested and are playing catch up with you now. Onika talks about the intimate blockages that manifested itself over time. She feels like her use of non-Western practices helped her let it all go, enabling her to get pregnant.
And so I was learning that my body was literally releasing and letting go of things. And so I really feel like there's all the steps that I took sort of leading up to this experimenting of the yoni steam and then discovering this woman with the teas and the various herbs that address my specific problems and issues. I think that all the work that I did and the spiritual work that I did and releasing, I think that all of that sort of in combination sort of helped lead me to the pathway to being able to conceive my child naturally, because medical professionals said it was never going to happen on my own. Like, this is a wrap. I just listened to myself and I listened to my gut, and I made decisions based on the things that made sense to me. And so that would be my advice to anybody. And everyone's going to be different. Their journey is going to be different. But for me, I just felt like going the route of Western medicine, just hadn't worked for me. I already tried it, and it wasn't successful. I felt like it was actually potentially hurting me. So I wanted to find something else that would not give me that feeling. And it led me to this path.
As women, we do have biological similarities, but our circumstances and outcomes are all different. I hope you were able to connect with at least one of these women and their stories, their lessons, and advice. This allows you to set expectations for yourself and your partner in an informed manner. These women didn't take their biological clock as seriously as we should. Like Nora suggested, once you hit that mid-30s mark, you should start the investigative process with your OBGYN, just to know what you're up against or not. Thankfully, non-Western medicine worked for both Onika and Bianca in more ways than one. If you would like a downloadable list of these takeaways and resources, you can visit my website at www.ninababel.com, look for episode number 19, and enter your email address in the comments section. Thanks again to Nora Bolger from the Reproductive Medicine Associates of Connecticut for participating in this episode, and their contact information along with the resources that Nora mentioned will be available online and posted in the show notes. So myself and Girly Nation went really deep this week, because there's an embarrassment or shame that comes with not bearing children, whether you like it or not. It's a societal pressure we learn at a very early age as a young girl. But that wraps up our series, and this is evergreen content that you, as a woman, should never forget. When you have those conversations amongst yourselves, girlfriends, mother-daughter, or even daddy-daughter, this is a nugget worth sharing. Before you leave, I want you to give me some love, Girly Nation. If you like this episode, kindly leave me a rating, review, and subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher. Girly Nation, this is what helps me stand out from the crowd. You can connect with me on social media because I love Twitter, Instagram, and send me a snap on Snapchat. You could use the handle at Nina Babel. Then lastly, you could go to my website and subscribe to make sure you're in the know with all of my latest and greatest. Was this episode good for you? Because new episodes drop every Tuesday on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Don't forget to share the show with your girlies. And if you have a question or a personal story, you can send me an email to ask@ninababel.com. Lastly, you could check out my videos on YouTube by typing in the search field Nina Babel. But that's it for this week, girl. Smooches!